This podcast of The Exchange is supported by Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucettesurvey.com. That's D-O-U-C-E-T survey.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The recent scandal called Gamergate started out as an online movement against corruption in gaming journalism, but soon became about something much bigger: anonymous harassment, some of it extreme, against women in online games. Gamergate also became a vehicle for misogynist strains of gamer culture that some feel have been brewing for years. While girls and women now make up half of those who play video games, female gamers still often feel invisible, and when they are visible, disrespected and even abused in some game environments. Today in The Exchange, a look at women in gaming, a topic that's erupted in the wake of this Gamergate controversy. Also, we'll look at how the conversation about women in gaming highlights larger issues faced by women in the field of technology. Let's hear from you this hour. Do you play video games? Do you consider yourself a part of gamer culture? How do you feel about the critique that this is an unfriendly community for women? Is it a fair criticism or not? And should female gamers just stay away from the sites and games that bother them? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are two people who've been looking at this issue for some time. David Auerbach is with us, writer and software engineer. He currently authors the Bitwise column for Slate. David, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Nina Hunteman, associate professor at Suffolk University in the Department of Communication and Journalism, co-director of Women in Games Boston. And Nina, good to have you too. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Nina, I'll turn to you first. You're a longtime gamer yourself. Obviously, you're female. You've written about the complaints that women gamers have, that the culture isn't friendly, whether it's the roles in games that are demeaning or whether it's women being harassed online. So here's the obvious question, Nina. Why keep playing, especially those games that have qualities that you and other women don't like?
Because gaming is fantastic. It's fun. It's exhilarating. It challenges me to think about things in a different way. It taps into some of the things I love, which is problem solving and playing games with others. It's very social. I mean, there's so many reasons to keep playing games. It may seem lately like there's plenty of reasons to leave, but no way. Not going anywhere.
Now, tell me if this analogy works then, Nina. I like going to the movies, but I hate violent movies. So I just don't go to violent movies. So does that apply to games? You know, if there's certain games that are just demeaning to women or threatening to women, just don't play them.
I think that you can attempt to make those choices. It's an interesting analogy that people keep comparing video games to films for several reasons. There are plenty of genres within games, but very much like films, the ones that get the largest production budgets and the ones that are going to be on, you know, consoles that most people might have their hands on, those games tend to be perhaps the more action-oriented, you know, very much like blockbuster games, and they get more attention. But I find plenty of games that perhaps stay away from the themes that, you know, as you say, might find offensive to be able to play. There are places to go. I think this recent conversation is about wanting there to be just more diversity and more options. I think it's a lot like films for kids. If you're a parent and you're looking for a film in the theater to take your kid to, it's actually kind of hard to find one that you might find appropriate for children. There might be one or two as opposed to all the other fare that's in the theater. People were just interested in more options.
Yeah, what do you think about this, David? You know, if you don't like the game and how it portrays you, then don't play it.
I certainly can agree with that. The latest game I was playing was a game called Hadean Lands, which I'd recommend to everyone out there, which is actually a text adventure which takes place in a science fiction realm, except instead of sort of our scientific universe, it's a realm in which alchemy is the science, and you play a person who's sort of been suspended in time and has to repair a futuristic spaceship. There's no violence in it, and it's really an intellectual challenge. And because my reflexes have always been poor, I've always shied away from sort of games that involve sort of quick trigger fingers. So I would say that, yeah, I mean, it is sort of the old sort of narrative between sort of more popular culture, which, you know, historically does tend to favor sort of, you know, a male demographic over a female demographic, just because of the way our society is. But, you know, in the more obscure spots, you can find all sorts of bizarre curios that in no way resemble what people might think of as sort of standard games.
Since you mentioned demographics, David, let me ask you, what's the stereotype of the demographic who plays video games, and what's the reality, David?
I guess the stereotype is that people think of maladjusted basement kids who can't relate well to anyone except people exactly like them. The reality is that you know, gaming is now at least an $80 billion a year industry, and so the people who are playing these games really form a pretty wide swath. You know, you have people like, you know, the football player Chris Klua, I think I'm pronouncing that name right. It might just be Chris Klu, you know, who's famously a World of Warcraft player. And so I think that you're looking at a situation where it sort of encompasses pretty much people from sort of all walks of life who sort of, you know, up until their mid-30s or even into their 40s.
Nina Huntemann, I'd like your thoughts on this, too. I came across a statistic that said that now half of all video game players are indeed women.
Yeah, I have two things to say about that. I mean, obviously, since I've been a female gamer since the late 1970s, the stereotypes never fit me. It never really made any sense. I think that's one of the things that that some gamers are reacting against, is that stereotype doesn't fit most gamers, and it hasn't fit most gamers for quite some time now. And one of the things that I find so disappointing about the conversation, if it's even a conversation around Gamergate, is that we're almost flipping back to creating a mainstream the idea that stereotype not only exists, but in fact represents most of gamers, you know, and it's just not true. And, you know, the other thing I'd say as well is that those statistics about who plays games, they are all-encompassing, and they don't break down by genre. And very much like other entertainment, you're going to find gender breakdowns by genre, you know, romantic comedies versus action films. And so there is certainly something to talk about when we talk about, you know, the gender in games, absolutely. But if you want to talk about the entire universe of people who play games, yeah, you just can't say that it's that stereotypical basement-dwelling teenager, male teenager.
Again, the phone number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, too, if you'd like. And David and Nina, here's a Facebook comment from Nick that came in before the show. He says, gaming is exceptionally welcoming of women. There are no shortages of women gamers and game developers who will attest to this. Nick says, my suspicion is that ideological crusaders such as Anita Sarkeesian and Zoe Quinn, who have taken to baseless positing skewed, dishonest accounts of games and gamer culture, have so effectively sown their undebated narratives of victimhood so well that, as usual, this will be yet another instance where only those who propagate such narratives will be heard. Nick goes on a little bit, and Nick, I'm sorry, I won't read the whole thing, but he concludes by saying, the reporting on this matter throughout the media, including NPR, who I typically have a great deal of respect for, have been exceptionally lopsided and biased in favor of promoting this particular narrative. What do you think, Nina? Has the media, including us today, jumped on this narrative of, you know, gaming being unfriendly to women because it makes a good story, even if it might not be true? At least Nick feels it's not.
Well, certainly it's conflict, and we know the news media likes conflict, and there's a lot of conflict within Gamergate. And I have some sympathy for NPR and other news organizations. It's a very difficult topic to cover, in part because Gamergate has been co-opted by so many different agendas, if you will. And even trying to summarize what it's about for an audience who, you know, as you said, may not be familiar with games, let alone Gamergate, is incredibly difficult. I don't think that it's disingenuous to say that there are areas within gamer culture that are very unwelcoming to women. What, of course, is always difficult is using that to characterize all spaces where games are taking place. And so what it requires is a very nuanced coverage. And, you know, for many reasons, I think that's difficult to do.
What do you think, David? I'd love your thoughts on Nick's comment. Nick, thank you for chiming in.
Yes, unfortunately, there's so many, as Nina says, there are so many points packed into there. It's difficult to even begin in it. So I'll settle for making a few points. One is that there's a broader problem here, and I think that when people speak of an unwelcoming culture for women, it is a culture that those aspects are not present merely in gaming to a point, but are present, I think, on the internet at large, that what people are seeing in terms of harassment, what people are seeing in terms of sort of, you know, the disproportionate attention given to women who speak out in one way or another is something that unfortunately is common to the internet at large and to some extent to society at large, as I think, you know, most people would agree. And so I'd like to say that focusing on gaming to the exclusion of other internet spaces in particular is, I think, something of a red herring. And I think, as Nina says, you do have a situation where so many people who aren't related to gaming at all have gotten involved in the Gamergate issue on all sides. While this is something that had its spark in gaming culture, it's now spread out to something that encompasses many, many facets of life on the internet and indeed life in society at large.
So just to target games isn't really getting at the whole point, David.
No, I definitely think not. And I mean, one point I make is, whether the reporting has been biased or not, I think the reporting has been very histrionic at times. I've seen comparisons of Gamergate from everything from the Ku Klux Klan to the Nazis to Genghis Khan to the Black Death to Ebola. And, you know, as much as some terrible things have taken place, when a journalist comes on and says that he wishes that Gamergaters could have been gassed in the Holocaust instead of the Jews, I just don't think that is a productive thing.
It's getting a little extreme, yeah. And hold on, David, if you could, please, because after a short break, we'll just explain to the audience who might not understand exactly what Gamergate is and how it got us into this larger conversation about women in gaming. All that's coming up in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today on The Exchange, a look at women and gaming, a topic that's erupted in the wake of what's called Gamergate. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But let's hear from you, too. Do you play video games? Do you consider yourself a part of gamer culture? How do you feel about the recent criticism that this can be a very unfriendly community for women? Is it a fair criticism or not? What do you think about the idea that female gamers could just stay away from sites and games that bother them? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter like Nick did. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are David Auerbach, writer and software engineer. He currently authors the Bitwise column for Slate. Nina Hunteman is also with us, associate professor at Suffolk University in the Department of Communication and Journalism. She's co-director of Women in Games Boston. And both of you, let's go to our listeners now. And Jeremy's joining us from Littleton. Hi, Jeremy. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. Yes. I just wanted to comment that, I've been an avid gamer for quite some time, and from what I've noticed, it's not so much that women are excluded from the gaming culture, it's more of a lack of interest from what I've noticed. I know that a lot of the video games definitely, target the male demographic, but, I think that's mostly because women aren't very interested in gaming for the most part.
Although 50% of gamers now are women, Jeremy, we hear.
Oh, I find that, I don't know. I find that pretty surprising.
I did too, to be honest. Yeah. Just very briefly, so we can get a better sense of where you're coming from, what sorts of games do you like to play, Jeremy?
Oh, I came up playing on PC. I played a lot of mass online role-playing games and a lot of, you know, like Call of Duty and those sorts of things.
Okay. Jeremy, thanks a lot for calling in. This is a good question, Nina. What do you think? It isn't that women are excluded. It's that they're not interested.
Yeah, I mean, I think the comment that Jeremy makes really reflects something that, you know, I've heard a lot of recently. And, you know, he reflects a particular market that the video game industry, again, the sort of very significantly well-resourced blockbuster-type games, you know, has been speaking to, which is more of a male demographic. And, you know, like David said earlier, there are plenty of other games that just aren't getting the same kind of attention, you know, marketing attention, for example, trailers on major networks and that kind of stuff. And there are a lot of women playing the games that you might not associate with, you know, the blockbuster type games. But obviously, you know, I find Jeremy's comment doesn't reflect my own experience, and I've been playing games for a long time and always been surrounded by other female players. We're out there. I think that's pretty obvious by now, but certainly we haven't been the key demographic that the game industry has targeted. And that's what's so interesting right now, is that part of what I think this has sort of put fuel on the fire is that the industry is recognizing that there is a much wider market than has typically been targeted in female gamers. And so as they start to move their mode of address, if you will, towards that demographic, there's been this reaction.
You know, it's interesting, too. I read that, and this I'll throw to you, David, that 70% of women who play video games, when they do player-to-player games, they take on a male character so that the men they're playing with won't know. So maybe there are more women out there. We're just not aware that they're there.
Well, a lot of men also play as women characters.
Really? Okay.
Yes. They've done studies on that well as well. There is one point I wanted to address. Nina hinted at this, but I just wanted to spell out clearly, which is that 50% study sort of drives me crazy because if you break it down by genre, it obscures sort of the reality that the 50% figure is obtained through relying on games like Candy Crush Saga and other sort of quote-unquote casual games on mobile. If you look at what I think people think of when they think of sort of, oh, okay, this is what sort of a gamer plays in terms of, you know, Call of Duty or Xbox games or PlayStation games, that is still a much more heavily male-dominated.
Okay, so the types of games people are playing are very different depending on male or female.
Yeah, and as far as in terms of per capita money spent, there's certainly much more coming from men.
I see.
That said, even within what we might call quote-unquote hardcore gaming or gamer gaming, there is a significant, not the best term, but there is a significant female population, just as Nina says. There are hardcore female gamers. They've been called the quote-unquote mantle gamers. And I think one of the things that really has been overlooked is that there are many people on the Gamergate side who are women, both cis and trans. And I think one of the most interesting questions is, why are there women on that side? And I think that I think the question deserves very close attention. I don't claim to have an answer for that. But when I see Gamergate members stereotyped as all being straight white men, that's simply not true. And I think that answering the question of why that's not true is something that will actually help us get a much better grasp on what's going on here.
Okay, and both of you have brought up Gamergate, and I mentioned it briefly in my introduction. But we haven't really told folks, Nina, what this is, and we're not spending the hour focusing on this controversy. We're focusing on the issues that have come out of it, the conversation we're having now, you know, what these games are like, whether the community is welcoming, why more women don't develop men, what kind of games women prefer versus men. But if you could, Nina, just for a general audience who might not really understand what this is all about, just give us your best explanation of Gamergate and how it sort of erupted this whole thing. In 30 seconds or less, right?
Right, exactly. I always find this really challenging. I mean, I think, let's start with the hashtag, right? The hashtag Gamergate itself was first applied to a post that actor Adam Baldwin made in late August of this year. And he had posted links to two videos that were these YouTube-made videos about Zoe Quinn, who is the game developer for Depression Quest, and there were allegations from her ex-boyfriend that she had cheated on him and that somehow she had curried favor with journalists in the games industry in order to get good reviews for her game. Those allegations were later found to be quite false. But that hashtag being attached to that really does tell us something about the origins of Gamergate. And it may be that many people have since, you know, made Gamergate to mean something else for themselves. But I think it is important to remember it did start as a kind of, if you will, takedown of a female game developer based on accusations of a sort of jilted ex-lover that did turn out later to be false. And I think that's part of what sort of continues to thread through some of the conversation about Gamergate is there has been perhaps the loudest and certainly the most media coverage, but the loudest part of Gamergate being focused on female game developers and female video game critics, which is, you know, part of what I find problematic about it. But it has since spawned into many things. Some call it, you know, as you said, sort of a misogynist hate group. Some call it a consumer revolt. Many different agendas have attached themselves to it since. And it's just difficult, I'm sorry, to summarize, but that's its origins.
Yeah, well, that's the best short summary that I've heard so far. So, but here's my other question. I'll throw it to both of you, but maybe you first, David. So why aren't more women making these games? I mean, if women have all these problems with the games, why don't they make their own?
They are. And one of the things that I've actually been incredibly critical of is that much of this press spends more time bemoaning the lack of women developers than actually covering women developers.
Those
and
who were there.
I threw out a bunch of names in one of my first columns on the subject saying I'd like to see more coverage of people. Somewhat famously, the person who invented the sort of animated graphical adventure game, King's Quest, was a female designer, Roberta Williams, back in 1984, I think. And you've had a minority, to be certain, but you have had influential female developers from Williams to Anita Sinclair, who was the owner of the gaming company Magnetic Scrolls, to Kim Swift, the designer of the incredibly influential hit Portal. And I mean, my attitude has always been, you know, better to light a candle than curse the darkness. And I think that drawing more attention to many of the overlooked female developers that are out there even today would be better than sort of writing endless thought pieces that are in danger of becoming self-fulfilling prophecies by convincing people that there's no room for women.
Sure, and young women hearing that and going, yeah, that's not for me.
That's not to deny that it's, you know, that it can be an uphill battle, but there are examples, and I think that these women deserve more attention.
What do you think, Nina? And then I've got a lot of commentary from our listeners here that I want to share with you, but this is an important issue. You know, women making these games, David's saying, you know, yes, there are women making these games, but they're not getting the attention that they deserve. What do you think? Why don't more women make online games and video games?
Well, one of the things that I'm particularly interested in at Women in Games Boston is there's plenty of activity around trying to get more women into STEM, more girls into STEM, and I think those are important efforts, you know, because getting people, getting women into game development has to start very early on, you know, what they're learning in school, K-12, and then in college and so forth. But what I'm interested in at Women in Games Boston is to actually try and cultivate leadership within the games industry. There are certainly increasing numbers of women who are entering the game industry, but they're not taking on leadership positions, not certainly in the same numbers that we see in other tech fields. And so one of the things that concerns me about Gamergate and any kind of, you know, sort of public vitriolic response to women developers, which has had, unfortunately, you know, come up before Gamergate. There's been examples of the game developers, female game developers that Dave says we need to shed more light on, who unfortunately have been, you know, harassed by consumers, harassed by other developers in very public ways. I'm concerned that Gamergate might make women who are working in the industry hesitant to take more public, more visible positions. And we've already sort of seen some examples of that, seen some conversations happening within the women that I know about how sort of dangerous it feels to step into a more public light. I mean, until you have more women leaders in the game industry, I think this will continue to be a real problem for the industry.
Well, here's some more comments from our listeners. And here's Sonia, who sent us a Facebook comment. She says, the actual gameplay itself, in my experience so far, gamers are gamers, so it's welcoming in the majority. Sonia says there are people out there that once they know you're a female, do things that are sexually harassing, but it's in the minority in online play, in my experience. She says the rape and other violence threats that women gamers get by posting their opinions, that reaction to the threats is stuff, that stuff is intolerable, in my opinion, shouldn't happen, and the people making them should be prosecuted. Thank you, Sonia, for the comment. You know, I have read, Nina, about some women making their feelings on this topic known online, and they have gotten some pretty scary threats. How does law enforcement even help those women out, though? I mean, it's online, it's anonymous. Who knows how real it is? Who knows if it's just somebody trying to, you know, be a jerk? What do you think? I mean, does law enforcement even have a way of dealing with a woman who might get a death threat or another type of threat?
You know, Sonia brings up an important point, and she says that, you know, in the game spaces themselves, there is certainly harassment, and if you do present yourself as female, you might get more so and particularly sexualized version of harassment. But what we've seen lately has been some really targeted, very public, threatening harassment of specific women who, as you said, have spoken out around these issues. I'm talking about Brianna Wu and, of course, Zoe Quinn and Anita Sarkeesian. I don't know the internal workings about how the FBI is looking into trying to figure out who made, for example, the threats against Anita when she was supposed to speak at a Utah university. One of the things that's really difficult, of course, is jurisdiction issues. You know, it's on the internet, like which jurisdiction would have to investigate. That's why the FBI makes sense, because it could be national, but what if it comes out from outside of the United States? So many of these accounts, of course, are created anonymously. They disappear as soon as they're made. And so I find it's an amazing conundrum, and to some extent, to go back to a comment Dave made earlier, this is not a problem just, of course, with Gamergate. This is a problem of the internet, and how law enforcement are going to deal with that, I think, is going to be evolving over time.
Here's an email from Michael, who says, I'm a 42-year-old male. I've been a big gamer since 2000, although I did have an Atari system back in the 70s. I'm a working professional. I own three businesses. He says, I play a few first-person shooter games, and for me, the gameplay is an escape. I feel like it masks all my troubles and allows me to forget them while I'm playing. Michael says, I do play with quite a few women, and I enjoy the gameplay. He says, I do notice that other males, not in our group, will often target the women for ridicule and teasing. I've even heard guys say that women shouldn't be playing these types of games. Michael, thanks a lot for the email. And David, your thoughts there?
That sounds like a fair comment to me. I think that there, you know, as in many walks of life, unfortunately, there can be a very welcoming environment, and there is often a terrible minority of bad actors, and the issue is always what to be done about that. And online harassment in general, and specifically of women who receive a disproportionate amount of it, is a real problem. My fellow writer at Slate, Amanda Hess, has written about the difficulties police have in tracking these people down and how they are so rarely prosecuted. I would add that, you know, what's been going on over the Gamergate saga has not just happened to a handful of women, but it's happened to perhaps dozens of women on both sides of the issue at this point. Female members of Gamergate have also been disproportionately targeted for harassment. One member just last week had was slotted, which is the term for when an anonymous person calls in a police report saying, oh, there's an emergency at this person's house, and they break down the door and you are in danger of getting killed. So, you know, there's some pretty crazy stuff going on in all directions. And one of the things that I stress is that, you know, because of the anonymity, anyone can do anything in sort of the fog of war. The Utah bomb threat, for example, didn't even mention Gamergate. So who knows where it came from? It might have been a Gamergate member. It might have just been some other random psycho who hates the speaker. And so it's very difficult to figure out, you know, where anything is coming from. And there have been people, sort of what people call trolls who are literally in this just to stir things up. And unfortunately, in an environment like this, the media attention makes it all the more appetizing, since I could go on and say, you know, I think female gamers should all, you know, leave and stop playing games and say hashtag Gamergate. And, you know, I've just made a statement on behalf of Gamergate.
Yeah, well, and to the point that Nina made earlier, how do you think this whole Gamergate controversy might affect women who might think, yeah, I really want to design these games and I really want to work in technology, specifically this area, but it's just too ugly? What do you think?
I've spoken to a couple women in gaming. I've heard a variety of attitudes, and I think that mostly it hasn't the sense I've gotten from them has not been that it's alienated from them doing the work per se, but they definitely do not want any sort of public profile.
Yeah.
That said, they kind of felt that way already. They certainly don't want to speak up in the Gamergate context specifically, because it's like a magnet for abuse, controversy, and harassment, no matter what position you take. But in general, even before then, as Nina said, that, you know, there was a problem in just being, you know, an outspoken woman on the internet in any context whatsoever.
Okay. And Nina, I'll let you jump in there after a short break. And maybe some other reasons, Nina, why women don't go into these video game jobs. Again, about 8 out of 10 people in this field are male. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Thanks for the email, Michael. You can email us, too. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, too, if you like. More on women in gaming and tech in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, what is New Hampshire and what might it become? We'll look at the findings of a new report. Today, we're looking at women and gamer culture. Let's hear from you. Do you play video games? Do you consider yourself a part of this culture? How do you feel about the recent critique that this is an unfriendly place for women? Is that a fair criticism or not? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And here's an email that came in from Yvonne. And Yvonne, I won't read the whole thing, but thank you very much for the note. Yvonne says, I myself have been a gamer for over 20 years and am a woman. I have found that in most genres, there aren't problems between male and female gamers, but it seems the more competitive and stat tracking a game happens to be, the more likely that I am to get harassed just for being female. Slinging insults and griefing are part of online gaming. That's here to stay and I've always been around. But when it gets personal, just because a man hears your voice over a mic and decides that you need to be targeted for this and not because of your gameplay, that's where I take issue. Here's a question for you, I think, David, you first. Is more of the problem that women complain about games like that you buy, you know, Assassin's Creed and Grand Theft Auto, or is it more about the player-to-player online gaming? What do you think? Or is it both?
Well, I think one of the more depressing things I've seen come out of this is the canard that video games cause violence and misogyny. There really hasn't been any such link actually shown in any sort of meaningful way, and I think that there is sort of a moral panic there. I think that to a much greater extent it is what Yvonne?
Yes.
is talking about there, that, you know, there are people there are men specifically who do harbor exclusionary attitudes and just do not take women seriously intrinsically or worse, give them abuse or harassment. So I see it more as being an online social problem rather than an intrinsic problem of content. In that case, there's a case to be made that yes, video games may be disproportionately violent, but I don't single them out as being some particularly awful font of content versus movies or really many areas of mass culture.
Well, Yvonne, thank you for the email. And again, you can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Nina, back to our earlier conversation about why more women aren't making video games, getting involved in these tech companies. I visited Google last year on a trip to California, and it was quite male, if I could put it that way. You talked about how this whole Gamergate and threats and so forth against women might discourage some young women from going into this field. But what else is out there in terms of, keeping women away from high-tech companies, especially game-developing companies?
Yeah, I mean, this is it's a multifaceted problem, and I think we need to rely upon, good social science research to be able to make claims. And there has been, thankfully, lots of work coming out of this area. There's a couple of reasons that are frequently found in these kinds of research projects. One is that women are typically, if they do get a job in a tech industry, at Google, for example, they find themselves as being one of very few women. And so there is a sense of isolation. Sometimes the workplace culture is very male-oriented, and that can kind of just add to the sense of isolation. But some of the more specific things that I think are problematic is there's been some research that has shown that women's evaluations, when they come up for review, tend to be more negative than on balance, tend to be more negative than male reviews. And then with the lack of female mentors, again, women in positions of leadership to mentor younger women, it can add to that sense of isolation. One of the things that frequently happens is what's referred to as the sort of leaky pipe syndrome, where women may enter a technology field, but then leave it at a much faster rate, at an earlier rate than men do. And that is in part from a feeling of there isn't much promotional opportunity. They see their male counterparts being promoted into greater, positions, more responsibility and so forth, and they don't see those opportunities coming their way. And so if the sense is, I can't really get much ahead in this career, I might move over instead to a sector where I can. But again, I want to underscore that this is a multifaceted issue, and thankfully there's a lot of research being done in it so we can understand it better. But I think lack of mentors, a feeling of isolation, and again, not having those female leaders showing your way, all are really significant contributing factors.
Well, it's kind of surprising in one way, Nina, because I feel like every time I turn around, some education official or politician is talking about yet another grant for girls in STEM. I mean, there is a lot of emphasis now on money and support for girls going into science, technology, engineering, and math. So, what gives?
Well, I hope there's follow-through, right? I think it's wonderful that there's a lot of educational opportunities being made for women in STEM fields, and that's really important. But there needs to be sort of the follow-through throughout the career. And some of that, certainly doesn't fall on necessarily the government and our educational systems. It also falls on the industries themselves, really putting an effort towards creating, leadership tracks for women, and encouraging them throughout the sort of arc of their career. Getting into it, of course, is the very first and important step, but I'd like to see more done with keeping women in the industry and, again, providing them opportunities to excel.
Yeah, and David, I want to get you in on this too, but one more question for you on this thread, Nina. You're looking at the industry and saying it should do more to encourage women and so forth. This gets back to Jeremy, our first caller, who said he felt like women were just less interested in playing video games, and we talked about that. What about the idea that women may be just less interested in working for these companies, whether it's from a content perspective or a lifestyle perspective? Yeah, just doesn't fit them, you know?
Right, sure. I mean, the other thing that Jeremy's comment kind of brings up is this, you know, for lack of a better euphemism, this chicken and egg syndrome. Do women not go into the industry because they see it as male-dominated, or is the industry confused to be male-dominated because women don't go into it, right?
Exactly.
Which one do you would you attack first? And, of course, what we should do is we should try to attack it from, or address it, if you will, from all angles. I don't find it, does not ring true for me that women are interested in game development, because every single month I'm in a room with women who are interested in game development, and they're networking and they're creating games. We have an amazing independent game development space in Boston. There's a lot happening here, and I see a lot of women very interested in getting into it. And we see a lot of women who are still in college who still want to go, you know, into this career. So I don't think it's fair to perpetuate this idea that women aren't interested and thus, you know, I don't know, don't support, don't bother, don't try. In fact, whenever there is, for example, a weekend where girls can come and learn how to code, it's packed and there's a waiting list, you know. And as I said, we have a really robust membership at our weekly meetings or monthly meetings. So I just don't buy it.
All right, let's go to another caller. And this is Aaron in Hudson. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for joining us here on The Exchange.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I just wanted to comment. Somebody mentioned earlier the idea of trolling. I think it's a little even more underestimated in this culture. Of course, with everything, there is obviously sexism and harassment and stuff like that. That's going to exist, unfortunately, pretty much anywhere. But in the gaming culture, there's a very heavy group of people that live to do nothing but to troll everybody else. And I've worked in gaming industry for years. I actually do gaming charity events. I go to most of the big conferences in the area. And in my experience, women are pretty heavily accepted. Of course, the harassment exists, but I've experienced nothing but a welcoming attitude towards them.
You know, Aaron, I'm interested if I could ask you a question, given that you work in this field.
Yep.
Is that all right? You say that you go to the conferences and you're involved in this industry. What do you think about this theme of there's not enough women, in some people's opinion, making these games? And that they'd be more welcoming to women, maybe a little less demeaning if there were more women making them?
I definitely agree to an extent. I think one thing is that, don't forget, you're also dealing with a percentage of a percentage of a percentage. I think it's somewhere where, you know, not a ton, but I think male gaming is recognized as about 55% to 60% gaming as males. So, you know, even if it's not a lot, there are fewer women gaming, I think. And then you deal with, you know, and then what percentage of them actually want to be involved in gaming. And then you're looking at what percentage of them are talented enough to be involved in gaming. And then what percentage of them may or may not actually be overlooked. Again, in no way am I denying the existence of it, but again, you know, you're dealing with a percentage of a percentage of a percentage.
So at developer conventions, at conventions involving people in the industry, what would you say? Is it like 60-40 male-female or 70-30? Or?
I think it's probably closer to 60-40. Uh-huh. And I think that it is growing. In New England, conventions like PAX, you know, there's thousands and thousands of people in and out every day. I definitely think you see it growing. And I think it's welcomed. I mean, you know, there's lots of people cosplaying and stuff like that. And you also have to understand that I think this is a pretty heavy, primarily somewhat kind of socially disconnected group of people at times. So I don't think you can always put tons of thought into how everyone's handling situations exactly. I think that there's a large percentage of, like I said, of sort of socially inept at times.
All right. Aaron, good to hear from you, especially given your involvement.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Make one comment.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Nina.
One of the things that I'm finding often happen is there's a conflation of, you know, who's gaming and who makes games. And also, just like the genre question that we brought up before about, you know, that breakdown of 50% women playing games and what have you, the genres, I also think that you can look to certain kinds of sectors of game development. A lot of the games that are being developed in the indie sector may have a lot more women in it than the mainstream sector because of the kinds of games that are being created. I think that's an important piece to keep in mind as well. And also, going to game developer conferences is actually really expensive. And so smaller independent game developers may not be as present, and so we're not perhaps seeing some of the diversity because those conferences might be out of reach for them. Again, this is just pointing to how this is a really complicated complicated issue that I think we need to start breaking down to understand it and not make such broad sweeping claims.
All right. And here's a Facebook comment from Eliza. This is real interesting. I'll throw this at you, David. Eliza says, I think part of the problem is that girls slash women are socialized not to like gaming and certain types of games. Eliza says, I played a lot of games online and off, some more violent than others, with my brother and his friends growing up, but was actively discouraged from continuing when I realized my female friends were not doing the same. Eliza says the type of games available to young women are also disturbingly girlified, with a focus on fashion, boys, and drama with girlfriends. Wow, Eliza, thank you so much for the comment. What do you think, David?
I think she gets into a lot of huge societal issues, and I think that, I mean, I can't even begin to speak to them other than to say that those are very good points that merit deep investigation. I mean, you know, this applies to broader things in tech as well. I have a young daughter, and there was a Lego set giveaway, and there was two sets, one for girls and one for boys.
The pink
and
one
the boy,
and the not the, pink one. Yes, I'm
well,
familiar with
well,
that.
it was a bit more subtle than that, because the girl set was a woman sitting with a desk and a laptop. So nothing blatantly, you know, problematic. The boys one was an airplane, and you know, I said, give us both, you know, because I wasn't going to take any chances. And it was very clear that the boys one was more complicated and more fun than the girls one. And I said, well, you know, this is not helpful here. So I think there is that sort of, you know, to what extent catering towards, oh, this is what girls want or this is what boys want, reinforces the existing divides, and how, you know, there should be less of those assumptions being made on both sides. So
here's a question for you, though, David.
I think Eliza hints at this, and that's not to say that there aren't more structural issues, such as, you know, women being discouraged sort of at periodic stages from birth. There have been studies showing that in college, for example, women and men who get the same exact grades in computer science programs, the women tend to self-report as being less good and tend to drop out at a higher rate. And, you know, you can understand why that might be for a variety of reasons. But, you know, when you have factors like that, it is what the other caller said about a percentage of a percentage of a percentage, that you're getting sort of this, you're getting a drop off at many stages throughout life, and unfortunately, just focusing on one will only render at best a partial improvement. So, yeah, I think that unfortunately it is a holistic problem, and it's one that doesn't easily reduce to one issue or one dynamic, as Nina said.
Well, Eliza, your comment is really interesting. I want to ask you about it too, Nina. You know, this idea that, as she puts it, the type of games available to young women are girlified, with focus on fashion, boys, and drama with girlfriends. Here's the question for you, though, Nina. I mean, marketers are smart, right? They want to make money. So clearly, some girls, anyway, must enjoy playing these games.
I would actually argue that marketers aren't very smart.
Really?
Okay. Well, that's probably very unfair to say. Actually, it's, again, another large statement. But let's put it this way. For a very long time, defining the gamer as primarily male, interested in action, worked really well for a significant portion of the gaming public, because it brought in a lot of money, and that's still true for games like Call of Duty. But in doing so, they are not signaling to, for example, the female gamer like myself who might enjoy Call of Duty. And similarly, plenty of, you know, male gamers, hardcore or otherwise, do play Candy Crush. But when we rely upon marketers to define our desires, we're ultimately going to be left unsatisfied. What I think is one wonderful thing to come out of Gamergate, I suppose, is that what it's cracked open is this idea that one single market is not going to satisfy all, you know, people who are interested in games, and that the smart game companies will recognize that and will start to put to use Dave's example, they'll start to put Lego packages on the shelves that don't signal one gender or the other. They're just signaling fun. They're just signaling creativity. And I hope, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, that's sort of what I'm really hoping comes out of this, is that we can let go of this genderized conversation around gaming and just talk about games.
All right. Well, Nina, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Nina Hunteman, Associate Professor at Suffolk University in the Department of Communication and Journalism, Co-Director of Women in Games Boston. David Auerbach, great to have you too. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
David Auerbach, writer and software engineer. He currently authors the Bitwise column for Slate. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Mikesell. Our intern is Joanna Albertson-Grove. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.